Hi, sorry. Someone just asked me to record this the shiur, so I'm just going to go backwards for a second. Mm-hmm. We said earlier that we wanted to dedicate this shiur, this Torah study, in memory of a very very special individual, a very special young man, quite young when he passed away. His name was Mr. Marcus. He had a son who actually went here to U of T. He had sons who went a number of other places as well. But it's definitely something which is worth mentioning. And so the Shloshim, as we said before, that there's a custom that after 30 years after Burn passes away, you dedicate the 30th day. And in fact, for the first 30 days, you study Mishnayot, a Jewish text. The word Mishnah, if you flip on the letters, is Nishama, which is soul. And when a person loses their physical body, their soul, though, is still alive, and so we wanted it to be a zechud, be a merit for that soul, for that neshama, the Torah study that we do, that everyone's doing, and my son is in Israel. It's only 12:30. It's still young. It's still early for Thursday night. I mean, it's for sure. He messaged me not long ago, and so tonight was the shloshim. So tonight they did like the siyum in Israel because Mr. Marcus has a son, Ariel, who's studying the same yeshiva as my son. So that's the connection over there. And the reason I'm stalling is because I'm trying to get internet on my computer, and it's not working. Give me one second. Okay, the first number says that it's a v'nishmartem me'od l'nafshoteichem, that we have to safeguard ourselves. And this is understood as an obligation. And the question is, how much am I allowed to risk my physical body? But risking your spiritual soul is also, by the way, an important question. How can how much you put yourself in a situation where you might stumble spiritually? That's not today's topic. Today is how much you risk your physical body, right? So that's, we spoke about the walking by a river and you see someone drowning, you jump in to save them. We spoke about a doctor when it comes to the coronavirus. We spoke about firefighters and police officers and first responders. We spoke about what method of transportation do you take to go anywhere? Someone doing a surgery in order, 90% chance of survival, and you'll survive today, 10% chance you'll die. And if you survive, though, you'll live for many, many years versus you only have 6 months to live. What do you do? And donating a kidney, right? Donating an organ, donating these types of things, or, taking a bullet for somebody and you'll lose a finger, let's say. Not die, but you lose a finger, right? These are all the very similar situations. So the question is, and it's fundamentally based on a very important principle in Judaism, and that is we do not have autonomy over our bodies. This goes against very much the secular world that we live in. The secular world says, it's my body, I can do what I want, as long as I'm not harming somebody. That is not the same when it comes to in Jewish thought. Jewish thought is, we are not autonomous beings over our body. And it's interesting, the source number two in the Sefer Chinuch tells us that, no, our body is a vehicle for the soul. Our body is a vehicle for the soul. And the Torah, the Bible itself, even tells us we need to do things that to protect ourselves from danger. Believe it or not, not only does the Torah talk about Shabbat and talks about kosher food and those things, but it also talks about putting a fence around the rooftop. The mitzvah called ma'akeh, that you're obligated to build a fence on a rooftop. Now, it's actually very interesting. In Toronto, we don't go on our roof too often because they're slanted. Our roofs are slanted because?
Snow.
So the weight of the snow would add a lot to our house. We'd need more steel and support, and that's expensive. You go to Israel, you're not going to see a slanted rooftop in Israel. Now, high buildings in Toronto don't have slanted rooftops. They're flat. And it's not because helicopters can land on them, although that would be cool. But the reason why they don't have slanted rooftops is because buildings are made out of?
Concrete,
right? Your house is not made of concrete. Your house is out of cheap wood that you can huff and puff and blow down, right? Right? In Toronto, anyways, that's the case. So they're made very cheap, even though they cost like millions of dollars, which is quite crazy. that you're paying for selling garbage, which is worth material-wise, literally nothing. Like, it's worth... It's ridiculous. Okay, but you can complain all you want.
Are you in trouble with your...
Now... No, but Ruth's okay. Ruth's okay. Thank God. Ruth's okay. So I get back to our... So again, we have... we put a fence around a roof. Now, why do you need to put a fence around your roof?
Safety.
Safety! Now, what happens, by the way, if I want to go on my roof once? You know, my kids throw a ball and it goes on the roof. Wait! Can't go on the roof to get the ball until I build a fence. No. The rabbis tell us that only if you're going to use your roof on a regular basis, you're obligated to put a fence around it. You want to do it once, right? You get the ball off the roof. That's on the roof. That, okay, that you get. You don't need a roof. You don't need a fence, sorry. You need a roof for us as a ball, right? So, but that's the idea, is that the concept of going on a roof regularly requires a fence because of safety. You do it once? No. The odds of you, and this is important, why not? For one time, you don't need to go out of your way to ensure that much safety. Because if you regularly go somewhere that's dangerous, then chances are you might fall hurt yourself. But once? What are the odds of once? Now, by the way, is that 100%? 100%. Meaning, could you be 100% certain that by going on your roof to get the ball, you're not going to fall down and die? No. But once, you know, is unlikely. So we allow you to do a temporary usage. But permanent usage, regular usage... The Torah actually tells us you need to build a fence. And that's what the in source 3, the third line says. And this is a very important concept. And that is it shechiach? Is it common? Vayimi. Is something common? Because the moment something is common, i.e. I go and I use my roof regularly, no, regular usage, my friend, you need a fence. So the question we're going to ask ourselves is, what about, what's considered regular? What's considered normal? And he said, the Tzelach Chochma says, if you want to climb on a roof for one time, at 2 a.m, when it's cloudy, or when there's winds, even one time use, you can't go. Because that's foolish. That's dangerous. But if, you know, 2 o'clock on a summer day that your kid threw the ball on the roof, okay, go take it down. But 2 a.m, when it's -20 and the winds are howling, you would be foolish. And that'd be forbidden, not because you don't have the fence around it, because it's dangerous. It's considered a sakana. You're not allowed to put yourself in a dangerous situation. Wow.
So then I shouldn't go skydiving.
Okay, so this leads to questions. What about skydiving? What about the, what's that, the walk, edge walk, helicopter rides, driving, walking, breathing, going to UFT, and engineering is dangerous, they say. A lot of people die, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You gotta take some risks, I feel.
Dentists are dangerous, no, the high suicide, I don't know, what? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Right? So, police officer, so the question is, how do we, now, running across the 401 at 2 o'clock in the morning is also dangerous.
Well, that's just, I feel like there's a bit like, dumb, like something stupid and something.
So, I did research, I don't know how scientific this is, I did some research. And what is considered a high-risk surgery?
Like heart surgery?
In general, in the medical profession, how do you define a high-risk surgery? So, my research showed me, yes, percentage-wise. So according to Google, take it for what you want, if a medical procedure has a 95% chance of the person living, which means a 5% of dying, 5% chance of dying, that's considered high risk. So that means a high risk procedure is 95%. That's pretty crazy, right? So that means that when you do, you know, someone has a heart attack and they do heart surgery or a kidney stone, or right? So it's 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000. If 1 in 100,000 women die when they have a C-section, that's not high risk. That's what happens. Those are the facts. So therefore, you could, you know, I have a feeling if, you know, Mount Sinai had a case of one woman who had a C-section, she died, I have a feeling my son would be in very big trouble, right? Generally speaking, when these things happen, it's probably not in North America, it's probably elsewhere, right? So the odds of someone dying, again, there's obviously, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a, right, there's a very big difference between, like, you're totally fine and dying. You know, there's a lot of stages of gray in there, right? I get that. It's not one or the other. But still, nonetheless, you know, that's how they talk about it in the medical world. Source 4 says, Lolam al yamod adam akom sakana. You're not allowed to put yourself in a situation that's dangerous and say, God will perform a miracle. You can't say, I'm going to run across the street, the 401, at 2 in the morning. Why? God's going to protect me. You're not allowed to say that.
What? Save my kid.
Okay, hold on. But I want to show you that to say something stupid, it's called stupid. You don't roll the dice when it comes to these things. Okay? Now, and what happens if a miracle, the Talmud continues, what happens if a miracle takes place? V'imo silones, menakin lo mizchiyotav. Then all your merits disappear. Why? Because you just cashed in on your credit. Right? So if a miracle happens to you, this is, by the way, this is very deep. You don't say, wow, God, thank you. You're like, you put yourself in a situation, now you've lost some credit. Now, the difference is you put yourself in a situation, mm-hmm. right? The situation didn't just happen, but if you actively place yourself in a dangerous situation, you ask a question, to save your child, to put out a fire, to save someone in the river. Okay, good. So what does this statement mean? That you put yourself in a situation and you say, perform a miracle. Is that similar? It sounds like it's not similar to jumping in the river to save somebody. Running into a building to try and save somebody with the that's on fire, but just to do something and say that God will protect you is totally inappropriate. Yeah.
In terms of inaction, is there anywhere out of the Torah, the Talmud, where you doing nothing is you actually doing something? Like if I'm watching you drown and I could save you, it's easy for me to save you, but I choose not to.
So that's that verse in Leviticus. It says, "Lo tamar adam reyachon." You're not to stand idly by when your neighbor is dying. Yeah. By the way, that's in Canadian law. If you had an opportunity to say something you didn't, that's illegal in Canada. It's called the bystander law. Yeah? Okay.
There's also like the Good Samaritan law, which means that like they can't sue you if you, I don't know what.
If you attempt to help someone in goodwill, they can't sue you for making it worse.
Right.
Because, people are jerks, clearly.
Right. You tried to save me. Then you gave me,
you broke my ribs.
You broke my ribs, right.
No. We went to get CPR and I had a peanut allergy and
right.
I just died from the peanut allergy. Right.
Okay, good. Now, this is very complicated because the Talmud is going to tell us about bloodletting. Now, you have to understand some bloodletting. In the olden days, they thought bloodletting was healthy. They need to clean out your blood, the humors and the balance. You know, there's a medical knowledge that isn't like it was today. And so you're like, why does a bloodlet? There's danger in bloodletting. So that's what Source 5 says. Since many people regularly let blood, then Shomer Pita'im Hashem, he guards people who do not know to guard themselves. Meaning, okay, you bloodlet. Most people do it. God will help you. So what is considered normal, God will help you.
What?
Doesn't mean you're going to live, but you're allowed to do things that's not considered being reckless. So, which means, do many people drive a car? Yes. Many people take helicopters? Most people do. How about the skywalk? All those things, as long as people do them, it's not considered dangerous. That being said, so you should know something. Many rabbis, not many, a lot of rabbis in general, they receive a tremendous amount of questions and they write up their answers. It's called, in fancy English, responsa literature. Questions and they write responses. There's responsa literature that we know that dates back 1,200 years, and all great rabbis have responsa literature. And we have thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of letters that have been written. We have crazy questions that were asked in the middle of the Warsaw Ghetto from the Holocaust, very difficult, questions that were asked, and So too, you know, these are well-known situations. Believe it or not, there was a rabbi, I can't remember who it was, who said you can't go skiing. The skiing is dangerous. Because X number of people injure themselves. They're not going to die. They break a leg, like this. And he said he felt that the number was simply too high. What was that? 5%? I don't know the number. 5% of people who ski break. He felt that number was too high and it was too risky. You shouldn't go skiing. Okay, that's a minority opinion, though.
So I've heard this concept, actually. I know that there are, I mean, in the world, but there's a fair number of people who smoke, which is obviously extremely unhealthy. And so according to Orthodox law, like, how would you be allowed to do that? That's an Orthodox Jew, based on this concept. And that you actually know that you're slowly killing yourself. And then there's this thing of Shomer Pitaim Hashem, which is, like, sketchy. I don't really know.
Okay. The problem... Okay, first of all, most opinions say that smoking today is against the Torah because it's dangerous. The only way to say that it's not is because you got one smoke... So, again, if you smoke 100 times, that could affect... One smoke, it's physical damage on you. It's so smoking that's forbidden. So, yes, it's a cumulative problem. It's not a one-time instance. So the only way to justify, which I still believe is wrong and incorrect, the only way to justify it either is because the responses that were written in the 1960s and 70s just didn't really know the scientific facts at the time they were limited. Everyone smoked. The opposite. They thought it was healthy. They thought it was good for your digestive system. Smoking after you ate was good for you. That's what everyone thought. And then research and blah, blah, blah. That's what they originally thought. And two, you'd have to argue that one puff isn't... So because that one puff isn't... That's the way to justify it. But you're right. Drinking. By the way, that is one of the major issues with, you know, drinking and drugs and alcohol and all those things. Well, one shot of alcohol, you can't tell me it's bad. But the problem is the cumulative dimension to it that potentially is dangerous.
So the people, like Orthodox people that smoke or people who keep halakha that smoke are going against...
Very hard to justify it.
Regularly, not obviously. Once in a while, but
I think first of all, it's a waste of money. Like, why is it a waste of money? It's a very expensive habit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so scotch, but
it's really a hobby to smoke.
What?
It's not a hobby to smoke, it's a habit.
So, it's expensive. My father, Avashom, used to smoke. He quit in 1986 or 87 when he was dating my mom. Mother once took his cigarettes and threw them into a swimming pool. My father was a teacher, took off in the summer. This was the summer, took off his shirt, dove in the water, took his cigarettes, dried them out so he could still smoke them. So, but I agree, to justify smoking is very difficult to do. Very tenuous. Yeah, I don't see how you could justify, how you justify eating unhealthy food?
Well, that should be the same question, I guess, but...
Yeah, well, that's different.
There's no Surgeon General warning on food. Don't eat this, you know... Don't eat this cookie. Surgeon General warning on it.
I mean, I could just be poor and I crap.
Right.
It's expensive to eat
that. Right, healthy is more expensive. For sure it is. Okay. Hey, we're running out of time. There's one issue in Source 6... That's very interesting. And that is, before Passover, you're not allowed to have any bread or leaven. And the procedure of looking for bread or leaven in your home is called bedikat chametz, checking for chametz. So the Talmud says, do you have to go and check in a place where there's crevices that you might find scorpions? That'd be dangerous, get bit by a scorpion. I realize the modern equivalent is very difficult, right? But that's a question that asks. After all, what? Shaluchei mitzvah einan nizokin. When you do a mitzvah, you won't be harmed. There's almost an additional protection when you're doing a mitzvah. Right? And in Source 7, the Torah will even protect you. So how do you deal with this? Yet we know many people who do many mitzvot and many wonderful things, and they die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know, an Israeli soldier who tries to help they die, they get injured, these things happen. We need to be protected, right? Someone's going to visit their booby, and on the way, they get the car accident, they die. Someone's on the way, in Israel, someone gives somebody a lift, and they were killed by terror. So, the question is, that statement of doing a mitzvah protects you, was that something only from the times of the Talmud? Where there's more sense of divine protection, does that still apply in the modern world? Are there those who argue that doesn't apply anymore today? Or are there those that say, no, it does apply, but it's not a guarantee. It's just, you're allowed to do something a little more risky than usual because you have this protection. I mean, it doesn't mean that you should, because I'm an Israeli soldier, I can now walk through enemy lines and, and go, because why? Sure, but Hashem. No, that's not what it means. It means that if, let's say, because that'd be very risky. So if that's true, you don't need any military information, you don't need the Mossad. Just, walk through in Gaza and do whatever you have to do. No one's going to attack you or destroy you because Shemar Patay Hashem, God protect you. We know that's absurd. That can't be right. So it has to be that, that when it comes to calculating risk, let's say there's a 95% chance. High risk? Maybe you're allowed to do something a little bit more high. By the way, that's 95% chance of survival.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be allowed to do it, even though it's high risk? 95%, you're allowed to do it. Why? Because it's for a mitzvah. Maybe. That's how some people understand that line in its modern context. And we know there's a commandment, why? To live. The Chai Ben, source 9, says there's a mitzvah to live. You have to live for a mitzvah, not die. So it can't be that you're allowed to do a mitzvah. So you have to live for a mitzvah. We know. It says the following, right? Oh, you're allowed to break Shabbat because of a life. If a woman goes to the hospital, she's going to give birth. If you're going to die in Yom Kippur, you can eat. Why don't we say, God will protect you, you're doing a mitzvah. So it can't be that when we say that God protecting your mitzvah, he puts you're doing a mitzvah, you get a force field, you got a Superman force field around you, and guns will shoot at you, and there's bombs or whatever, and you'll be totally fine because you have this defense field called God's protection. That's absurd. That's not a Jewish concept. You can now run across the 401. Those things, it just simply can't be true. So it has to be understood as there's a little bit more divine assistance. Exactly what that means, I don't really know these things. But okay, so what we've done today is we put out these outlines, and next week I think we'll take this and we'll try to see if we can apply it to different cases, different scenarios, now that we kind of have the principles and the language to kind of evaluate different scenarios. Okay, thank you everybody. We'll end there for today.